Hey everybody, my name's Jesse Lee. I'm the online programs director here at the White House. We've been doing a lot of stuff to try to follow up on the State of the Union, answer people's questions, flesh out some of the president's proposals a little bit. All day today, we'll be having these kind of online roundtables with some of the best sites on the web that can penetrate into these issues. The first one we have is on the economy. We've got Austin Goolsbee, the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. We've got MSN Money represented over here. We've got Examiner.com. We've got Mint.com. And I'll let you guys introduce yourselves as we kind of go around. Also, for those watching at home, I'll be keeping an eye on our Facebook application where you can discuss the conversation as we're going along. And I'll take some questions as I see them come up too. So go ahead and dive in. Austin, yeah, you want to say any kind of just brief remarks on the President's State of the Union, just kind of sum up the overall picture that he was putting out there.
Sure. I'm the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. Obviously, the big theme coming out of the President's State of the Union was economic in nature, that we need to win the future, which was really about out-innovating, out-educating, out-building, and bringing some rationality and thought to the long run government situation in the economy, that those things are how we're gonna grow our way out of these problems and how we become more competitive and set up better careers for our kids and going out in the future. And so there were a lot of policy ideas in that, but it was a message which was meant to be one that could be embraced by people from all different sides of the aisle.
All right, we'll go ahead and just kind of do rounds of questions, I think. So let's start with Amy Stone with MSN Money.
Thank you. Yes, I'm from MSN Money. Thank you so much for having us and inviting all our readers to ask their questions. We got a lot of them. The first one I wanted to start with was about taxes. That was a big topic that people wanted to address with you. And we got this one from Matthew from Reading, Pennsylvania. And he writes, Mr. Goolsbee, during the State of the Union speech, President Obama spoke of reforming our tax code to both simplify it and close loopholes. What kind of reform is he looking at, and would he entertain a serious investigation of a flat tax arrangement? And then this is related, so I'll throw it in there. A reader, William, asks, is there or is there not any possible way to establish a fair tax system that does not require a master's in economics or a CPA for us poor tax holders to handle?
Well, on the second, I have a PhD in economics that I have a hard enough time with it. I think there's this issue of tax reform, I think, is an important issue, and the president outlined some thoughts on it in two areas. So the first, which he identified as a bit of a double win in that it could help make us more competitive internationally, make our employers more competitive internationally, as well as bring some rationality to our tax code, was on the corporate side. And there, in a way, what he's describing is a bit of the flat tax philosophy. Let's broaden the base and lower the rate. So right now, the United States is about to have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. We were second, and Japan is reducing their rate. And yet we don't collect more revenue than the average rich country. And so you say, how could that be? And the answer is because we've carved out various forms of activity, various deductions, you get credits, you have loopholes. And if you eliminate a bunch of those and broaden the base, you could lower the rate without losing revenue in a way that would make it much simpler for people that are running companies to operate their business, as well as making it more competitive. So I think you'll see a focus on that. And he put the challenge to Congress and to business, let's do that, but let's make sure we broaden the base and lower the rate like the flat tax. On the individual side, we must begin with simplification. Now, the president thinks that the high income tax cuts that President Bush put in place ought to expire. You heard him say that in the State of the Union. We ought to be open to examining any kind of tax code simplification or change that would make the system fairer, make the system easier to understand, but we've got to be mindful that we don't just go to massive tax cut of very high income people that doesn't equalize, it doesn't keep revenue stable, and where in some of these, they're just counting on it to trickle down. I think the president in the State of the Union was saying he's a bit skeptical of the trickle down nature, but for sure, we ought to be open to any possible reform that's going to simplify, make it more efficient, and generate revenue.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and one of the things I should have mentioned is I think all sites here, we invited them to take questions from their readers, so you know, there's a good representation of, what people kind of on the ground are thinking and wondering, and that's one of the things we like to do here. And Jake Heller with Examiner.com, maybe you could talk a little bit about kind of the whole network of sites that you guys have and how that works.
Sure. Thanks, Jesse. It's great to be here. It's very great to meet Mr. Goolsbee, and it's great to be here with you guys as well. We took the pulse of our readers and solicited questions about the economy, both before the State of the Union and after the State of the Union. And it was interesting, the responses we got. So some of the ones that we surfaced are a little bit different than what we got after the State of the Union. But just to kind of tell everybody a little bit about Examiner.com is that we're the nation's leading media network, powered by like the world's largest community of local influencers or local insiders. These local insiders are examiners. So our writers are called examiners. So they like to examine the topics of the day. And a lot of our local examiners have been writing about the economy and asking questions about unemployment and jobs and things like that. So based on the responses we had, about 75% were concerned about long-term unemployment. So our first question is from Liz Steer in Mapleville, Rhode Island. And I'll just read verbatim and paraphrase where it's applicable. The long-term unemployed are at a disadvantage finding new jobs. Those that lost their jobs at the height of the recession are now called 99ers, and according to the reader, often discriminated against due to the length of unemployment. The majority of these people were middle-aged, former middle class, and are not eligible for any further benefits other than SNAP. Are there any plans to add additional weeks of unemployment compensation to keep the 99ers from becoming homeless while a solution is found to help them find a job?
Well, look, but where the phrase 99er comes from is the president extended unemployment benefits and extended them again, and then in the tax deal got the number of weeks that you could be eligible, and then got an extension for how long those extensions would last. And the most you can go is 99 weeks, and then the benefits run out. I don't think in the tax deal the president got a 13-month extension of the current law to prevent millions more people from becoming 99ers, or the equivalent if you're in a place where 99 weeks. And it was, no one thought he would be able to get the extension that he did. I don't think that there has been much sentiment in Congress to extend the benefit weeks past the 99 weeks. Now, the reader that you have there matches, I get letters and emails from people in this situation, and it's awful. It's really heartbreaking. The things that we've done to try to address this, you've got to get the job engine running. That's the only way to try to solve this problem. And I think the reader is correct that the people who've been unemployed for a long period, they then face the double whammy that as if the economy wasn't bad enough, then they have a second, at some companies there's a bias against, well, you've been unemployed for a long period of time. And so they're hiring the more recently unemployed ahead of the longer term unemployed. The president put in place the HIRE Act, which gave tax incentives to employers to hire people that had been unemployed for longer durations, and I think that has been important. The president has put a major focus on trying to facilitate and get credit and cut taxes for the self-employed and people starting their own firms, that a lot of times if you can't get a job to go work at a bigger firm, there are people going into business for themselves. And third, with the tax deal, in addition to extending unemployment benefits, it's doing a bunch of things to try to stimulate and get going the macro economy, which is the only way we're going to get out of this problem. Now, I think, I don't see how there were people opposing extending unemployment benefits. In a normal period of a boom, there are about 1.5 there are 1.5 people seeking work for every work opening. And in a recession, that can go up to 2 or 2.5 in a normal recession. In this recession, that ratio went up to over 6, and it's still above 5. So it's come down to, but there are 5 workers looking for work for every job opening. And where in a normal period of time, you could find a job quickly, in an environment like this where you're coming out of the deepest recession since 1929, you can't. So we've tried to prevent millions more from getting in that situation. We're doing everything we can to try to get the job engine going and giving them incentives to hire the 99ers. I haven't seen in Congress a sentiment to extend beyond 99 weeks, unfortunately.
All right, and we got a lot of questions about that here in the chat too, so thanks for taking that and thanks for asking that. Let's go ahead and turn to Lee Sherman with Mint.com.
So Mint.com is a free online service that helps folks manage their money, and we produce a lot of content, and we have a very vibrant community that we reached out to ask some questions. And our readers being a little bit younger, I think the overall theme was one of, is there a future for me? And touching on things like Social Security and retirement and all these kinds of things. So the question is from Anna Marina Soriano. I don't really have much faith in Social Security benefits for my generation. I would be interested to find out what is in place to keep the system up and running. So I think, you know, long-term fixes as opposed to short-term fixes.
Yeah, the president did touch, I mean, as I say, the theme of State of the Union was there is a future. It's not going to be a bleak future. It's a bright future. And we just need to make sure, you know, recognizing we start from we're the richest country in the world, most productive workers in the world. The other people are growing, but they start way below where we are. And so I think it's important we start with that. And so most of the theme was about how do we educate, innovate, and keep growing. Now, he did touch on the issue of Social Security. And in the context of broader long-run fiscal consolidation, I think it is how you'd call it, sure. We have known for decades about the long-run fiscal challenge facing the country associated with the aging of the population as well as rising healthcare costs. What the president said, which is the right thing to say, is the deficit size is not primarily due to discretionary spending. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he outlined, look, we're going to be putting out a budget in the next couple of weeks that is going to bring discretionary spending levels with the freezes that he's called for. Yep. To levels as a share of the economy that have not existed since Dwight Eisenhower was the president. As he said there, we have to all admit to ourselves what anybody who sits down and looks at the budget knows is that's not enough. That's just a sliver of the budget. And so we've got to think about these issues. Now, he has said that with Social Security, again, we ought to be open to look at any plans that strengthen Social Security, not undermine it, so that it can be there for people at Mint.com who are reading or wherever, yep, that there will be Social Security and that we not privatize Social Security and put it onto the whims of the stock market. Now, with that as the guide, he's open to let's discuss all different ways to make sure that it can be there, because it's probably the most popular government program that has ever been. And it has helped assure the retirement, a safe and secure retirement for millions and millions of people. I think that it's not an immediate pressing problem. It's one that we've got to take long-term solutions on. And the president outlined in State of the Union, he's open to looking at how we do that.
Great. Thank you.
All right, and I want to plug a couple real quick that are related from the discussion online here on Facebook. Hickory Strongheart asks, I noticed that most of the initiatives that President Obama mentioned in the State of the Union address related to long-term restructurings and innovation technology. In the short one, I can't see how these initiatives will create jobs. Deborah Renfro actually asked a question which kind of dovetails with that, which is, the problem is our employers aren't internationally competing. The problem is the jobs are hiring in other countries and not ours. To some extent, that may actually answer the first question, but maybe.
Look, you got two things. In the tax deal at the end of last year, the president negotiates an important contribution for the economy in the short run across several different categories. So one, people did not have their taxes go up right at the first of the year, and they got a payroll tax cut for, I think, 150 million workers. Two, extending the American Opportunity Tax Credit, the Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Care Credit, these are tax breaks for people to up to $10,000 over for a four-year college. The Earned Income Tax Credit is a tax cut for low-income working families. Some business incentives to encourage investment as well as innovation on the R&D side. And all of these were meant to be going right into the economy right away. You've already seen from the business investment provisions a number of large companies expanding their investment and hiring in the United States, building out factories and buying equipment and hiring people, saying because of this tax break, they're going to go ahead and start expanding. And so I think that there are a series of immediate measures. It's true that the main focus of State of the Union was on where do we need to be going out into the future? What do we want to grow into? So we're passing out of the phase which was rescue, where whether you argue about individual policies, which worked or didn't work, our effort was prevent a depression and stop the free fall of the private sector. We succeeded at that. And now we move into a phase which is we must grow. And by growing, that is how we're going to add jobs. And as we phase to that, I think we must keep an eye on where do we want to grow into. It isn't the case, in the second question, that all the jobs are growing internationally. That's not true. You have seen last year 1.3 million private sector jobs added in the United States. Now, that's a good start. We got to do more. That's not near enough. But we're coming into 2011 with a little bit of momentum. We've added more than 1 million private sector jobs. We've seen the private sector forecasters up their forecasted growth rate for 2011 for the overall economy. And I think we want to think, what do we want to grow into? And it is an economy where we're educating, innovating, and building here at home. And I think some of that is immediate, and some of that is where we're going long term.
All right, let's start back at the beginning with Amy Stone.
Okay, hi. So we got a lot of questions from readers concerning the banks. And basically what it turns out is that there's hundreds of people out there who feel like the economy could be doing better if the banks would lend money. Rates are low, they want to get in on a new mortgage and they can't do it. So Lou from Idaho, he wrote, he's unemployed after being a building contractor for 40 years, but has lots of savings and income from his Social Security and IRA and an excellent credit rating. And he writes, we've tried for the past 2 years to refinance our home to help sustain our mortgage payments during this difficult time, only to be told that we did not make enough income to qualify for a lower rate loan. Something's wrong with the current lending policies when people like ourselves who are trying to do the right thing and fulfill our financial obligations can't refinance. So is there anything that the Obama administration can do to help?
Well, I think this is on refinancing your mortgage is one type of credit, and it represents a broader issue that we see played out all over the space, whether it's small businesses having their lines of credit pulled by banks coming out of the financial crisis, which have hindered the growth of small businesses to consumer lending, whether it's for consumer spending, for auto loans, for mortgages, or small business expansion generally. This has been a tough area. The president enacted the small business jobs bill, which a major component of that were direct incentives and rules designed to get banks to open up more channels, especially community and local banks, more channels and more incentives to lend to small business. Because I do think that's one of the differences about this end of a recession compared with previous, that normally small business, one of the first things to come back, and this time it hasn't been. On the mortgage refinancing side, we have tried several different programs to try to facilitate refinancing. It's always gonna be a problem without a stable source of income in excess just of Social Security. A lot of lenders are gonna say, well, how do we know that you're gonna be committed to paying it back? It's a really tough spot when people with good credit and have good credit history and have assets are not able to get credit. And I think we can only hope and push as hard as we can to get ourselves out of credit crisis mode so that we are in more normal credit conditions. It's hard for just a regulatory, it's hard to have a regulatory solution to what we're describing there. However, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which President Obama put in place in the financial reg reform effort, will have and does have jurisdiction to make sure that mortgage lending is done in a way that all consumers can understand and is not being targeted away from some types and toward others, that there wouldn't be bias against somebody just based on what their situation is, and that we never repeat the kind of excesses that we went through in the run-up to the financial crisis, where you had a number of people who could have qualified for good, low-cost mortgages, and for whatever reason, the lenders took advantage and moved them into subprime, higher fee, more deceptive practice mortgages when they could have qualified for something better. The CFPB, as they call it, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is going to be reining in some of the practices that I think this reader might benefit from.
Okay.
All right, Jay Keller.
Interesting, to shift the, you'd spoke earlier a little bit about innovation, and the president during the State of the Union spoke of different ways that America can become more innovative. And one of the things that he spoke of was about clean energy.
Yeah.
And oil and versus new types of energy. Energy seems to be a place where the scientists and the educators can really go forward. So to kind of dovetail, I'm sorry, just kind of split right down the middle, is Matt Rippon from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania asks, he spoke of President Obama wanting to withdraw support for the oil industry in favor of the industries that he classifies as clean. And Mr. Rippon would like to know, where does natural gas fit into that equation? Is it still a resource to be developed or discarded?
No. In the State of the Union, the president laid out a dual vision. One on the how do we pay for shifting to clean energy. He said, let's end the subsidies to the oil industry that are in the tax code now. But in the clean energy standard that he described, the president even said, look, there are some people who say we ought to put the focus on wind, on solar, on clean coal, on natural gas, on nuclear. And the president said the true answer is we need all of those. We absolutely need clean natural gas to be part of our energy mix, and it's going to be part of our energy mix. So he's not talking about discarding natural gas at all. And there are many circumstances where natural gas is substantially cleaner than the existing technology.
So we'll still continue to drill for oil as much as possible as well. That's still part of it too, and refine the.
We will still be drilling for oil, and the U.S. is a large producer of oil. The question is, ought we to be subsidizing oil at the expense of some other technologies which could be cleaner, which could open up new industries? I think there the balance suggests we ought to not be tilting the scale as heavily in favor of oil. You know, we could be shifting to some of these other technologies.
Right. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. And Lee Sherman?
So in along the lines of the cure possibly being worse than the disease, reader John Harvey asks, how will the spending freeze not result in a massive jump in unemployment as what it did in 1937?
Well, there's two parts to that. Let's not get into a debate about 1937, other than to say, in 1937, it wasn't spending freeze that does it. They go actively and massively try to cut, and that pulls the rug out from under fragile recovery. Mm-hmm. I think at this moment, you want to be careful yanking the rug out from under what is a fragile recovery. We've got some momentum. We're going into 2011 with some growth. The reason the deficit is large last year and this year is not from the long-run fiscal challenges facing the country. It's because we just went through the worst recession in virtually all of our lifetimes. And when that happens, the automatic stabilizers, tax revenues, go down. Spending on unemployment benefits on a variety of cyclical factors go up. That's the main thing driving the business cycle in the short run. The spending freeze on discretionary non-security that the president outlined is over the next 5 years. It's not designed to go yank the rug out from under the recovery right now. And indeed, the president's tax deal at the end of last year was specifically designed to try to get more activity in the here and now. I think as you look out over the next 5 years, we've got to obviously make tough choices. Sure. to keep the fiscal situation from deteriorating.
And so
it's a bit of a balancing act. I think your reader is exactly right that we want to be mindful not to do things that drive up the unemployment rate in the immediate term. It's 9.4%. I mean, it's way too high. We got to do everything we can to be getting that down.
Sure.
Okay. I want to touch on one other thing that's come up in the chat here. Margaret Nagel Moran asked about it. Jackie Saunders Tortora, I think, asked the reduction of the payroll tax, which you've spoken to a couple times here, was very harmful to Social Security. We are deadly concerned of that you're not strong on this issue. The non-response on this discussion from your officials is very telling. So let's make it not so telling.
Hey, I'm proud of your eyes here because that is maybe the smallest font I've ever seen. The payroll tax cut, it's not true. It does not have any impact on the Social Security Trust Fund at all. They replace the revenue that goes in the Social Security Trust Fund from general revenue, and it has not deteriorated that situation. That is a separate issue as well from Social Security reform, which Lee had asked about before.
Sure.
But in this thing, I don't think factually that that's correct. It did not undermine Social Security Trust Fund. But it's important. Look, we should be mindful to preserve the Social Security system, so I'm glad we're examining that.
All right, let's do another round.
Okay, good. I'm glad I get this one in because on MSN Money, we have a feature where readers can vote, kind of vote up, give a thumbs up for questions. And this was the question that got the most thumbs up of any that we got. So it comes from James. And like many people, he's very interested in what's happening with the bailout money. I think a lot of our readers feel like they personally bailed out the banks and the auto industry, and they really should benefit from their generosity. So he writes, while appalled at the enormity of the bailouts for the banking and auto industries during the recession, my understanding is that most of that money is being repaid. Have those repayments gone to reduce the deficit, and to what extent have they improved the Treasury's balance sheet?
Look, this is a great question. When the bailouts, and I know people are upset about the TARP and the bailouts, And if you go back and look at the record, few of your readers will have had more colorful language about the bailouts than I had. Those began in 2008, obviously. The TARP was passed in 2008. It is the case that when most people think we spent $700 billion on these bailouts, when the Obama administration came in, they began imposing very tough conditions. And we can walk through the auto industry as an example, because it was also included in that. The money has been getting repaid vastly in excess of what was initially thought. It's not going to cost $700 billion. I think the most recent estimate is they think it will cost in total $30 billion. And there are some people who say it might not cost anything. That on many of these investments, indeed most of them, the Treasury turned a profit. They have gone to reducing the deficit. Now, it's in the sense that when they passed the TARP, they expected it to be a big deficit, and the actual number that's coming in is smaller and smaller. So that is shrinking the deficit. That is improving the balance sheet in that sense of the word, but we have yet to get to it being a positive number. Mm-hmm. It's simply a dramatically smaller negative number than they thought it was going to be.
Okay, thank you.
Not to do too much about the long-term unemployment, but one of the interesting questions from a reader, and I appreciate that you asked that because I think one of our readers had asked the same. But kind of going back to the unemployment, one person was unconcerned that so many people are, I'm sorry, concerned.
That, I got confused.
Unemployment, unconcerned, okay, excuse me. So many people are looking for work and companies don't want to hire people over 55. So Janet McElroy from California wonders if there's a way we can possibly push back the retirement age to 55 so people can collect earlier their Social Security benefits they paid into.
I don't think that the administration has not been pushing that. To me, that's a bit of a, that would be a bit of an odd response to an employment crisis like the one we went to of, let's just change it so that the people that are unemployed retire and then they don't count. I don't think we should, that will just paper over what the problem is. We need to generate jobs. That is what we need to do. We got to get the engine going. If there is a bias against older workers, we've got to address that head on. It's illegal, and we should be pursuing what the legal channels are on that. But second, if we have the engine humming and people are hiring, you've seen in the past, in the 1990s and in other periods, lots of groups that in down times are being hit hard. When times get good, people need to start drawing from the workforce, and some of our most productive workers are over age 55. I think if any business sits down and starts looking at productivity of workers, they will often find what I'm saying, that some of the highest productivity workers are there. So there has not been a great deal of discussion of reducing the retirement age on those grounds. I think we would have to think through the fiscal implications of doing a policy like that. But I will say where the administration's absolutely committed, A, to trying to get the job engine work revved up again, B, to making sure that if there is bias against older workers, that we are stopping that bias, and C, for the long-term unemployed, engaging in policy explicitly designed to try to give companies an incentive to hire the long-term unemployed to get them back in the labor force so we don't get into a situation where people's skills deteriorate and then they really have a hard time finding a job, as happened in Europe in the 1980s and in some of these other periods.
And I think we can get one more to finish out this round from Lee Sherman.
Okay, so also related to retirement, but more from the perspective of a younger reader, Philip 24 wants to know, will the administration be announcing new initiatives related to retirement saving? So any kind of incentives or something that's going to stimulate young people, to get them to...
Well, we have tried over this period to reduce taxes, give incentives for people to save. The president put in place, we've had a saver's credit that got extended. We've tried to have these, I think you'd call it universal 401k or automatic enrollment 401ks,
sure,
where the evidence has suggested that there are a lot of people who they're too busy to sign up. So what the default is at their employer makes a big difference in how much they're saving for,
right,
their retirement. And if you just change it so that you're automatically in, unless you say, no, please don't save,
right,
then you get an account. Those have been effective. We've tried to facilitate some of those. I think most of our area has been in the form of trying to get incomes up and trying to give, explain to people the incentives to save. Coming up with new programs now, obviously we'd need to come up with revenues to pay for those programs. So we're in a very tight,
right,
budget environment. I think most of the new programs and incentives we have now are about trying to encourage the private sector to get their employees to save. But
it's hard to get young people excited about retirement.
It's hard to get them motivated to be thinking, right, about, well, but you know, when you're 67, is that where you want to be?
Right.
But look, it's important. And as you get older, you know, you start having to think of these. I got three small kids, and we recently had a grandparent pass away, and our kids start asking us, you know, questions about our own mortality, and
sure,
sometimes kids can get you thinking about it. But I hope everybody will think about their own retirement. On the policy side, we've got to make sure Social Security is there and stable, and we have a large number of programs that are about encouraging savings that are on the books right now, and we want to try to explain to everybody what is there. There are a lot of great programs that people can, either at their employers or with the government, get matching and have it accumulate tax-free. If you start early, boy, it's a lot better. You know, if you wait till you're 57 before you start saving for retirement, it's hard to make it up. If you start when you're 25, it you know, really compounds.
All right. If you got time for one more from the chat, we'll probably have to close it out after that, I think. But Paul Sullivan asks, and maybe you can speak to this kind of issue of people starting up small businesses a little more broadly, why not fortify the SBA to provide millions of micro, under 10K, low interest loans to people to start our small businesses?
Okay, the area of small business, as I indicated, is critically important to recovery, has lagged the recovery in a way that previous recovery small business was leading, not lagging. The Obama administration has absolutely fortified SBA extensively and in numerous areas. It's a great idea what you have here, and we have tried to carry out many things like this. So as part of the Recovery Act, we expanded who was eligible for SBA loans. We expanded the amount of the guarantees on SBA loans to try to get more banks engaged in trying to make these loans. And we have had dramatic expansion of SBA lending. We've also had direct capital access programs for people starting up their own ventures. The president has cut taxes 17 different ways for small business people. The 17th was in the tax deal. And one of those was cutting the capital gains rate to zero for anybody who starts their own business or invest in a small business. So I think it's a great final question to ask, why don't we use SBA or others to expand small business? The answer is we should, we have, and we will, because that's gonna be an important engine of recovery.
All right, well, for those watching at home, I encourage you to go to whitehouse.gov/SOTU, S-O-T-U. You'll be able to find the president's speech there if you missed it. And you'll also find a list of all the other roundtables we had today, foreign policy, healthcare, education. And I want to thank MSN Money, Examiner.com, Mint.com so much for coming. And, of course, Austin, always a pleasure.